This week's conversation with Anna McDowell of Henry's Buttons is sponsored by Sassy Jack's Stitchery. Kim and the folks at Sassy Jack's are getting ready to open their new Forever home in January, and it'll be exciting to be able to visit the new store. In the meantime, be sure to check out SassyJackStitchery.com for the full collection of Sassafras Samplers charts. Kim and company are also now carrying the beautiful cottage garden threads and new designs from Ink Circles, including the Victorian Licensed Cosmo Kit. When you're doing your holiday shopping, a great gift for your stitching friends is a Sassy Jack's gift certificate. Sassy Jack's is also a great place to get supplies so you can make Dorset buttons. Make Sassy Jack's Stitchery your local needlework store by visiting the website at SassyJackStitchery.com and plan to visit when the new shop opens in January. And now, let's learn about Dorset buttons with our guest, Anna McDowell. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week, oh, this is going to be fun, Anna McDowell from Henry's Buttons, Dorset Buttons. Anna, welcome.
Hello.
Oh, boy, Dorset Buttons. This was so much fun to research. The cool thing is there's so much history, and then there's the art of the buttons. So I got all bogged down in the history. It was pretty neat.
Yes.
I must admit, from the list of questions you sent to me, yes, I can quite understand. But, you know, you did get a lot of information about them.
Yep. Yeah, it was so much fun. So, okay, so 2022 is the 400th anniversary for Dorset Buttons. I guess we should start by telling people what Dorset Buttons are, because I'm sure people just simply don't know. So give us your elevator pitch on what a Dorset button is.
Right. A Dorset button is a very small, very discreet little button that would have been on virtually everybody's clothing. It's rather like a shirt button is today, or a blouse button is today, or should I say a zip or a Velcro on your clothing. It, instead of having any of those modern inventions, you very well would have had a Dorset button.
And when we get to the history of 400 years, so that takes us back a minute. So when Dorset buttons were used for everyday use, that was the closure device?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. There's a lovely little bit of in a book by Ian Kelly on Beau Brummel, the man of fashion, and he describes how his master put on his shirts done up with tiny little Dorset buttons. And so we're talking about the end of the 17th, beginning of the 1800s.
Okay, well, I can't imagine. So there was a whole industry then of people making buttons.
Absolutely. At one point, they said that over 12,000 people in Dorset would have made Dorset buttons.
Holy smokes.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It was a very profitable business, cottage industry. But what I like about the whole industry itself, I'm sorry to sort of go back again, but...
No. Tell the stories, because...
I love the fact that the button industry was actually invented by someone called Abraham Case. Now, Abraham wasn't from the area of Dorset. He was from an area, the Cotswolds, sort of Gloucester, around that area, the Cotswolds area. And apparently he was a professional soldier. And as there wasn't any kind of, shall we say, outlet for his chosen career in England, he went to Europe. On his way back from Europe, he ended up in a village very close to Shaftesbury called Dorset. It's called Donhead St. Andrew. And the other story is that he ended up in the next door village called Wardour. Anyway, whichever village he ended up with, he actually fell in love and married a local girl. So I actually go around saying that the Dorset button industry was founded as a love story when a man fell in love with a woman and settled in her area.
So this name, Dorset Button, is nothing more than this is where this guy ended up and started this whole thing. So because you hear Dorset Button and you think, well, that's a technique or a style, but it's nothing more than that's where he lived.
That's where he lived, in Dorset. He ended up in Shaftesbury in Dorset.
And the whole thing starts there. So, I can just imagine if that many people are making buttons everywhere you go, so somebody's stitching a button.
Absolutely. And the county was divided into areas which would have had depots. And the villagers either took their buttons to a depot, or agents used to go out and collect buttons. But what's at each of these depots, and again, history sort of doesn't actually show us exactly how many, but so far I've counted references to about, I think it's 12 of these depots around the country, this our county. And it's the depots, the buttons would have been collected and then washed and then graded and then carded onto a colour card depicting what grade they were put at.
So they were graded according to what?
I think quality.
Okay, so not so. And then what about like size or anything like that?
Oh yes, there was size as well. I suppose really what you would have done is the size and the quality, and then they were graded in wonderful sort of diagonal or patterns or square patterns onto long lengths of card.
And then who sold, then what happened to those cards? Were they sold to like tailors, or they sold in London? I mean,
I haven't actually been able to discover exactly how the what the, should we say, distribution side of the buttons were, but yes, they would have been sold to tailors, to anybody who was in that trade and wanted buttons.
So, okay, because, you know, I think today, all right, today we buttons and you can go to a store and just get the standard four-hole or two-hole, white and black and blue and whatever. Would we have had people who are learning the skills making just plain Dorset buttons?
Absolutely.
How did that play out?
They were sort of, it was a family concern, really. I suppose what happened was you had mainly women, as far as I can work out from references to historical references, making the buttons themselves. And they could have been mothers, daughters, they could have been wives, anybody were making buttons. But in the depots, you had small boys dipping wire into solder to actually solder them together. They actually had a technical term called dippers. So you can imagine how that must have been sort of detrimental to their health, should I say.
Yeah, I'm sure that was. Yeah, you can count on that.
One thing you have to realize, in Dorset, the agricultural workers, which is probably where the workforce came from that worked on the Dorset Button, were the poorest paid in the country. And so any supplements to the family income would have been very, very useful.
Yeah. Well, the thing is so neat is the barrier to entry is so low. I mean, just give me some thread and circle devices and I can start making buttons.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Wow. But are they of the right quality and the right size?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Huh. So what did they use for their base when they first made the buttons?
Well, there are four different designs of Dorset buttons. There are the high tops and the Dorset gnomes. Dorset knobs. And the high tops were a pyramid type shape. And the Dorset knobs were sort of domed shaped, and they were made from a form of fabric dipped in flour water paste, formed into a hard mold. And at the base of that mold, there would have been a tiny piece of sheep's horn to make it strong. And when the button was sort of molded into the right shape and dried, it was then embroidered over. And I've seen very similar buttons of high quality. It worked on a wooden frame, a wooden pyramid shape, tiny little pyramid shape, and embroidered with gold thread. So it basically it's a linen thread version of a high quality button. And then they had a bird's eye button, which is just a cylindrical donut shape, and then made out of fabric, and then embroidered over again. Then we come to the ring buttons. Now, originally, they probably would have used bone rings. Now, but the wire rings were introduced in the 1730s by Abraham Case's grandson called Peter Case. Now, the wire rings were actually the start of the buttons that we know today, and they could actually get constant continuity in diameter, in size. And I must admit, they do make wonderful, wonderful bases for a thread button.
Yeah, because if you're using ram's horn, yeah, you getting the same size every time, just about impossible.
Absolutely.
Or
I've actually got a collection of bone horn, well, bone rings, and I must admit, every single one is slightly different.
but it does get back to that practice of using every aspect of an animal.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What little do you think that buttons comes from it?
Right. So I'm picturing then people who make just everyday buttons, and then there has to be this elite group of people who are doing the custom buttons and the high-end things for royalty, and there must have been a real stratus pyramid of skill and who makes the better buttons for the most money and that kind of thing. It must have been quite interesting.
I think the whole industry of button making is very interesting because here in England, at one point in the early 1700s, there was a tax on anybody wearing over a certain number of buttons, and you had to pay, well, you had to pay a tax on the excess numbers.
If you had a whole bunch of buttons going down your dress, you had to pay a tax on that.
If you had over the certain number, yes.
Oh, interesting.
But it was drawing a certain wall, which I think may have been the one we had with Canada or maybe even your country. We had to pay for it somehow.
Yeah.
That's right.
Tax
That's right.
button.
It's so interesting because I follow this history lady, I forget her name, on Instagram, who does most of her little clips in England, and she showed buildings where there were windows that are bricked over, and she said at one time there was a tax on extra windows, like you were allowed X number of windows, and so after that you had to pay a tax for the window, and so then people just bricked them up so they didn't have to pay. And so I'm bricking up windows and I'm cutting down on the number of buttons so I don't have to pay tax.
one likes to pay taxes.
No.
Absolutely.
Well, and that was the point she made, was that it didn't matter what your economic status was, people bricked over their windows because they weren't paying, and it backfired on them because they thought that they would collect be able to collect money from the richer people who had more windows, and they didn't. The rich people bricked them up just like everybody else. So,
Absolutely.
oops.
Stupid. Oh, dear.
Yeah, take that. Yeah. So the metal rings. Now you talk about health. Yeah, I'll bet making metal rings in that time that was had nothing to do with people's health.
Oh, absolutely. Nothing. No, it would have been horrendous. But don't forget, the people who are actually making the buttons themselves would have actually come from the agricultural workers who were paid probably when they were needed. So if they weren't needed, they wouldn't have got any income. And so you can imagine that, especially in Dorset, where they were the lowest paid in the country, button making was a constant source of income.
Right.
And all sorts of people. There's unfortunately being shall we say, audio as opposed to a visual chat. I can't show you a lovely picture I have of the a proposed inside of a cottage that one of these buttoners would have actually been lived in. But I must admit, the facilities would have been awful.
Yeah. Well, send the photo and we'll include it with the postings.
Unfortunately, I'm not able because it's copyrighted. I'm allowed to show you, but I can't publish.
Oh, nuts.
Rats.
Well, send me the photo and I'll show it on our Wednesday night live show. We can do that. So
Lovely.
we'll get a
We'll try. Yeah.
we'll cheat the system somehow. So, do you
Yeah.
have any idea what the distribution was? Was it just within the UK, or did it get over to European mainland in terms of how big of a source was for buttons was Dorset?
Well, they do say it was an international trade. Whether it went to, I haven't, but I haven't got any evidence of this. But I'm just assuming that drawing, for argument's sake, the English army over in Canada and also the States, we would have actually had to send supplies. So I'm just wondering if supplies of replacement buttons on shirts, etc., would have been amongst it, which would have been Dorset buttons. Maybe, but I
Yeah.
have more evidence of that.
Yeah, and those sort of they're long gone. I mean, to find something like that would be extraordinarily difficult, is my guess.
Absolutely. It would be lovely to know if any of your museums hold anything that was English of that era. And if they have any sort of old shirts or something, do they have Dorset buttons on them?
Yeah,
Yeah, that would.
I just got a whole new interest level in old clothing now.
And when I go to museums, I always go and I look at the clothing. If especially we went to, I don't know, some little small museum in a small town, and they had somebody's clothing from the 1860s, maybe 1830s, and I was looking, how was the dress put together? Just because I found it fascinating, but I didn't think to look for Dorset buttons on it.
Well, unless you know about Dorset buttons, there's no reason why you should. But because I have as you may sort of realize, I do have an interest in Dorset buttons, and I've been around museums looking at original items of clothing, and I must admit, I've seen so many high status items of clothing that have got Dorset buttons on them.
Yeah, and I just think to look, and because I've known about Dorset buttons, but I didn't realize that they were that old. That's
Oh
what.
yes. The industry actually started going out of. Well, they were superseded by mechanization, i.e., thread buttons and fabric buttons made by machines way back in the. Oh gosh, when they first started inventing machines. I think the earliest one was 1807. Then there was another one. Developed by someone called Benjamin Saunders, who is and he patented his machine in 1825. So you could say, as from about that period, the Dorset button industry was really gradually put out of business.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can see if you can stamp them out of a machine. Yeah. But there still had to been, I would think, some carryover in fashion because at some point, you got to have the special button.
Well, Dorset buttons weren't regarded as that special. what you did have is a lot of people developed the crochet button and the what I call the knot buttons and things like that. A lot of Victorian item clothing have those sort of buttons, which are not really Dorset buttons. And they're much more elaborate than a Dorset button.
Okay. Yeah. Now it says here in the research that Dowager Lady Lees is
Yes.
attributed with basically saving the Dorset button, and then that takes it off into more of an art form.
Yes, she must have been a very lovely lady because she went round hamlets and farms and farm cottages, just talking to people who remember their mothers or their or they themselves making Dorset buttons. You must remember that Dorset button industry virtually went out by the 1850s. Lady Lee started researching, basically 50 years later, and it was due to her that we managed to save all the different styles of Dorset buttons. And what people do today is take the one particular design, which is terribly popular nowadays, which is called, I call it the cartwheel design. Some people may call it the crosswheel, but I take it as the cartwheel design because a person, there's a historian who wrote a book about the village that Lady Lees lived in. And describes how these buttons were made and how they were distributed at the time. And she described the cartwheel button, which is exactly the same one as we know today, with the spokes that are further apart. The crosswheel, the spokes were very close together, if that makes sense.
Yes. And then they were just, didn't they, so they wove them to kind of together in that like a needle weaving, or did they, is it more like I think
It's rough. It's sort of between a needle weaving and a needle embroidery, because to make a Dorset button, you blanket stitch around the edge of your ring. This is the cartwheel button. You blanket stitch around your ring, then you make the spokes, and then you effectively what you're doing is back stitching over each spoke. So it's a form of weaving and a form of embroidery.
How
And
did
what
you
is so lovely?
become a Dorset button addict?
Oh gosh, basically by accident. I volunteered at our local museum here in Shaftesbury, and I was asked to put together a heritage lottery fund to raise funds to completely redo the whole of the museum. And one of the things that you're constantly asked way up there as the first question is why, how can you justify vast sums of money being poured into your museum? And so basically we actually put the whole application for funding around the fact that the Dorset button industry started in Shaftesbury, and we have the most wonderful collection in our museum. And luckily we got the funding. But I did learn how to make them. Simply, I bought a kit from what became a friend of mine and tried how to make them from that kit. And first attempts weren't too bad. And then in Shaftesbury, there was a wonderful lady called Joan Nichols, who unfortunately is no longer with us. But she was a very, very fine Dorset buttoner. And she actually taught me the tricks of the trade.
Yeah, there's always that person, isn't there, that knows
Oh,
all.
yes. Yes.
So were you, had you done needlework of any kind before this, or did the museum work get you doing Dorset buttons, and then next thing you know, you're a needle artist, basically?
No, way back in school days, I was always how shall I put it? Needlework and textile art and art were all my subjects. And I went to after school after completing A levels and things like that, I went to art school for a year. But being young and not getting what I wanted, you start throwing your hands up in the air saying, I can't cope with this sort of thing. You know what an 18-year-old can do. And
yes.
I was one of those. But I always had a keen interest in fabrics and all my life, even when I was working at other things. And it was lovely to have that opportunity to come back to it.
Yeah, there it is again. Exposure to textile arts and needlework as a child, and then it comes back and pays off later. Yep.
Oh, it does. It does.
Mm-hmm. Happens mm-hmm. so often. Yeah. So yeah. All right. So take us through the Dorset buttons. I mean, you mentioned the high tops and the knobs and the bird's eyes and the cartwheels. If I want to do a Dorset button, is it the cartwheel I start with? The high tops crack me up because I can't imagine wearing a shirt with all those little bumps in the front. Just catching on everything.
I think it was 30 of those buttons. And they wanted them 15 centimeters high for a shirt in a film. And I must admit, it nearly cracked me up, I can tell you, because trying to get them solid enough in the right shape, etc., was quite a challenge.
15 centimeters?
I never saw the results, I must have.
15 centimeters? That's like, what, 6 or 7 inches? Yeah.
Oh, sorry, millimeters. I tell you, millimeters.
Oh, millimeters. Oh, okay.
My mistake, millimeters. Mm-hmm.
But still, that's, wow.
That's a high button.
Yeah, I'll say.
Yes. I hope they sort of didn't embrace anyone too strongly, otherwise the whole lot would have flattened. Or they would have got pierced. Yes.
Yeah.
But if I want to start out with these things, I mean, you obviously can help people do that. I mean, it's what you do. Do I start with a cartwheel?
I always suggest start with a cartwheel, yes. Uh-huh. You can have such fun with the cartwheel. Because with the cartwheel button, once you know the basics, you can then go into a cartwheel patterns. So the cartwheel patterns like spirals, daisies. You can do cartwheels and beading. In fact, I'm doing a beading workshop, online beading workshop for a lace museum in San Francisco later in the year. I think it's beginning of December, and we're going to have at least two different types of buttons on a project, which is such fun.
Yeah, yeah. So in your kits and when you teach, do we now just use plastic rings or?
No, I personally, I keep away from plastic.
Okay.
I'm a bit like that. I prefer metal. I do like stainless steel. I do like the white coated metal rings, which are the lingerie rings. They're lovely. Mm-hmm. Hmm. And well, that's for my smaller buttons. But for larger buttons, I use wooden hula hoops, which. Unfortunately, I have to buy quite large quantities. So my studio is just full of wooden hula hoops.
So on the large wooden ones, then do you still do the buttonhole around the edge of the hula hoop?
Yep. Blanket stitching around the edge. And whatever I do, all my buttons are made in the traditional way because I do insist they are, I blanket stitch all the way around my hula hoops, and then I use, and it could be a piece of fabric I use, or threads, yarns, anything. Raffia, I've used raffia, and then I use the same methods of the overstitching, for the spokes, etc. But again, using all different fabrics and yarns.
Are those bigger ones easier to do are more difficult, or they're equally difficult, it's just a different challenge?
They're both just different challenges. The bigger ones are take longer,
right?
Yeah. And more yarns and threads, but I approach them both in the same way, because you have to think what you're going to do first before sort of diving in. And trying to get colour matching and everything like that is just, you know, you start with a project and you have to think all the way through before even starting.
Right. Do you keep a sketchbook of ideas then?
I do, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose it's not ideas. It's sort of projects I've completed. And I also put a little, with some of my larger ring projects, I also try and keep a little sample of the yarns I've used for that particular project, just to remind me what went into it and to sort of feel the textures.
Yeah.
Right.
It's interesting you say you stick with the traditional techniques. So even today, you're at the core of what you do is preserving the original way of doing these things.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's terribly important, because it is a heritage craft, and I don't want to deviate from the techniques of that particular heritage craft. And it's a way of preserving the techniques.
Is it on that list that you have of the endangered crafts?
Yes, Dorset Buttons is on that list, but it's not an endangered craft. It is just it's the next one down.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. But yeah, all right. So, but it's still in that realm of this must be preserved.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. I was interviewed for when they actually started compiling that. They did interview me. And I must admit, it was very interesting to hear to see the results of that particular exercise.
Small group of you people who are doing this?
Luckily, we're growing. We are a growing group.
Hooray.
Yeah, which is lovely. I'm absolutely thrilled, because workshops, I do online workshops, and I'm thrilled the way the news is getting about these buttons.
Yeah, I've seen, you know, other art that you learn the basic Dorset button, and then I think there's artists who are changing it, you know, making it more contemporary.
Yeah.
But I think that also keeps it alive, because they'll say, this is a Dorset button. And then so people will go back and look and say, well, what is a Dorset button?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why I think it's terribly important that when you do your contemporary pieces and wall art more than anything, you keep to the traditional methods, techniques, simply because then people can see a large version of what would have been a tiny, 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 sort of tiny button.
Yeah. Right. Your wall art is very striking. I really enjoyed looking at that. Is that something that is relatively new with the technique, or back when they were making buttons, did people also create bigger pieces to hang on walls as decorative items?
No, it's unique to now. I've never seen anything that big. But I don't think they would have had the time, to tell honest truth.
They need to crank out buttons.
Now to crack out more buttons, yes.
and that and the materials, because, you know, we're used to, you know, you go to the local store and you could buy yarns, you know, or, you know, to your local dyer or whatever to buy the yarn. It's for us. It's not that we're not shearing the sheep, carding the wool, gathering the flax, beating, making linen. You know, we're not making those things anymore. We're not doing that. So we have that time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point, Beth. Yeah. We throw thread around like it's nothing. And back then it's valuable. Yes.
Oh, it was a valuable thing. Can you imagine? So I, at one point, the income that the women received for their buttons, a certain amount had to go out again for payment of the next source of supplies for the next week.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, mm-hmm.
Become business people in a hurry. Yeah. So take us through what you do. You have kits, workshops. Tell us about your business so that people can relate to it and those who have an interest can know how to get involved in making these buttons.
Kits and things. I have a presence on Etsy, which is just simply Dorset Buttons. And people can actually buy kits. And I also upload some of my smaller jewelry pieces like earrings, bracelets, necklaces, that sort of thing. Then from my own website, I run, people can go there for workshops and things like that I run online mainly. Occasionally I do face-to-face. I do a lot of talks and workshops for groups over here in England, mainly embroiderers, textile groups. They actually do the workshops, but also I do talks for other organisations who are interested in local history, because around where I live, it's Dorset Buttons is a local historical sort of craft. Mm-hmm. And of historical interest. But I love the creation bit, where I do my wall art, where I do my creating. And I, so far this over the winter months, I'm exhibiting in a local gallery here, close to where I live. And also I'm taking part in a weekend exhibition, again, close to where I live. So I do enjoy, I love doing my creative bit. I also have a permanent presence in two galleries, one at a lovely location called Sculpture by the Lakes near Dorchester in Dorset, and an art gallery in Shaftesbury itself called the Signet Gallery. So I put my work about a bit.
So artist and evangelist then. Yes. Yeah. All right. So help me out. What size do I start with? Do I start with like a coat button size, or what? How do I get started? What is the best thing? I'm sure that you don't want to go too big and you don't want to go too small.
I always start people either on a 19 millimeter or 25 millimeter ring. Okay. And a quite a, what I would call a size 8, should we say, crochet thread. And that is a nice size to start with. Mm-hmm. And that way it doesn't take you as long as you would to actually make as it would if you went finer. With using a finer thread.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And special tools that we need, or just...
All we need is a firm ring. Well, as I mentioned, I prefer metal or something like that ring. And the yarn, as I mentioned, and also a blunt-ended needle. Mm-hmm. Probably would have used either a size 18 or a size 22 tapestry.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So that's a healthy needle. All right. Good.
Yep. It's a healthy needle.
But okay. So it really is not, in terms of materials, it's not an investment at all.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people... who do have a stash of yarns, just do a little bit of experimenting with all those yarns and a Dorset button. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that'd be a problem for Beth having a stash, but.
We won't go there. We won't go there.
Anna, one of these days we're going to get a tour of Beth's basement and we're going to see the magic stash. Yeah.
Yeah, no. All right. So I have a question about the singletons. So
yes.
So is that just a ring covered with fabric?
It's a ring covered with fabric, which has been slightly padded out, which would, where originally it would have been sheep's wool. But obviously, we don't use sheep's wool today. We just use a piece of wadding or something like that.
Right. So do they do the embellishment on the fabric first? Like if you were going to do a little stitching on it, did you do that first before you put it in the made the ring, put it on the ring?
It's one of those things that we don't know for sure, but when I teach people how to make the singleton button, I always say do it after because you've got a nice padded area that you can actually sew in. But if you think the women who used to make those singleton buttons originally, they would have had to have made, and this goes for all buttons, they would have had to made about 144 buttons a week.
Oh
And when
my.
you've got to make that many,
Holy
you're not
smokes.
going to be too hurt, you're too worried about how fine your embroidery is on the top of that button. That's why they kept it to a very simple, in fact, an incredibly simple design, like a little daisy or little French knots.
And so then the fabric isn't frayed around it. It's more like it's encased in the ring is encased in the
Yes.
fabric.
Yes. And it used to be encased in the fabric by using a little bit of a few running stitches on the inside of the ring. Occasionally, it was using they would have actually used a blanket stitch around the ring to keep it firm. But the majority of the buttons that I've seen have a little bit of, actually, effectively, it's a back stitch around the inside of the ring. Just to keep everything in place.
144 buttons a week. Imagine the ergonomics, the repetitive stress.
Yep.
Holy
Right.
man.
But you are talking a long time ago, and those women would not have had known of such conditions.
Right. And much sturdier people than we are today by far. Yeah. Wow. So, all right, so we start with a cartwheel button, and what is of the basic four, what is the most difficult? The high top?
High top. The high top and the Dorset knobs are the most difficult
Okay.
because they also are, take the longest as well.
I got to try these.
Yeah.
It's every time we talk to somebody, it's one more thing. Who was it? Anna Crutchley, we talked to about making braids
And cords.
and cords
Oh, gosh, you must get into that. That's lovely.
oh, and her work is so gorgeous. And then this comes along. It's like, oh, I got to do this too.
Right.
Well, the thing is, what you can do is combine the two, which is what I've done.
Oh, okay. Now explain this. Have combined the
I mentioned that I do the wall art. Sometimes what I do is I use a variety of buttons and other forms of craft or skills or what have you, and also fabrics. And they're not exactly an applique, but it's rather like creating a design using fabrics and buttons and other forms. Yeah, it's just, and one of the pieces of wall art that I did included braid. Which I had to do myself.
Yeah, that was the thing looking at your work, the way you work the buttons into those pieces with the other pieces of fabric, and it really is just fascinating art that goes way beyond just a simple button. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, thanks. I love doing that.
See, Gary, now you have another thing. Now she has those wooden forms, so you could have just order one of her wooden forms, so that way you have the wooden piece sitting on your desk, and it'll look lovely with the little things to make the high tops, right? That.
Right. Yeah. Oh, man.
Yes, those wooden molds. Yes,
Yes.
I have to get those specially made by someone I know, and. I must admit, he does do a very good job for me.
So there you go. Just another piece of wooden art at your house.
Oh, I'm a and I'm a sucker for good woodwork. Yep. Any day of the week, sign me up. Yeah. Yeah. So, Anna, are you one of those? Are you, you always have a button in your hand, like a knitter's always knitting? Or do you leave it on the table and walk away at some point?
Sometimes I have to leave it on the table and walk away because you do need thinking time. And if you're constantly making it, I prefer to think about what basically the next project, try to get more of the creative head rather than a let's churn out as many buttons as I can head.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
What threads do you find yourself using most today? Are you cotton, wool, silk?
At the moment, I'm just churning out things for Christmas. I've just managed to get my hands on some wonderful vintage DMC silk threads, and which I must admit are just so lovely to work with. I can see myself getting involved in making small little earrings and things like that using beautiful threads. One of my favourite companies for threads and yarns, etc., over here in England, is a company called Yarn Yarn, and they import threads from a ladies' cooperative in North India, and it's hand-spun nettle yarn or hand-spun silk yarn or hand-spun, everything's handmade, and the quality is, I must admit, lovely. And it's because it's handmade, you get that wonderful texture where nothing is quite, shall we say, it's not constant. You always get the little blitch now and again, which I love.
Yeah, I have a ball. I have a ball of sari silk that's been, I think it's been spun somehow, and it's lovely stuff. And now and then I'll use a little bit of it, you know, because it's a mixture of colors. And I think you're supposed to knit with it, but I don't knit. So I look at that and I think, oh, what can I do with that? Now you've got me thinking.
Yeah.
I could make a hoop.
You could make, not only that, the other thing you can actually do with the sari silks, because I used to make a range of sort of corsage type buttons, you know, brooches, where you use the sari silk ribbons, basically they call it over here, in its natural frayed state, cut it out into about 10 centimetre lengths, fold over, and then join them all together with running stitches. So they hang from the thread mainly. They pull them together, and that's a sort of petal flower shape, and then a lovely design button in the centre. And you can, because of the colours, you can really go to town with colours on your button.
Right, right. This is more like a yarn, like they somehow did something and spun it.
Yes, I know the. I think I know the one you mean. It does it. Is it quite flexible?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Very soft. And I haven't wanted to use it a lot because it's just such a lovely fiber, and I wouldn't necessarily stick it in a needle and stitch on needlework with it, but maybe weaving something with a hoop and making a, because it's too large for a smaller button, but a larger hoop, it might just be lovely.
Yes, I think I know the yarn you mean, and if it is, yes, it does come out. It has a wonderful, it almost has a sheen to it.
And this has got a lot of dark greens in it, so I think it would make a lovely background almost. And then weave a little bit. Anyway, now you got me thinking.
That's what I mean.
And off she goes.
Sorry, dear. No supper tonight. I've got to work on a project.
Yep. Okay, so talk about your book. Now, there's a book that we can get What do we get out of that? Is that show all the techniques?
Yes, I've got a little instruction booklet which tells you all the techniques on how to make all four types of Dorset button. And also it goes on to variations within the thread button, which is the one where the thread is wound round the ring. Variations on what you can do with that particular design. It also has a template for the high top button, and also for I think it's got a template for the bird's eye as well.
Mm-hmm. So that's a good resource to start with, and I assume if we take one of your workshops, good to have that in hand then.
You don't have to, because I do give people all the...
Anna, sell books. Oh, yes, you must have this book along with my workshop as a supplement.
Thank you.
Marketing is important.
I'm the worst at that for myself.
Sell it, yeah. So, okay, but that's great. So then, and going through your Etsy shop, I can get all the parts I need. It looked like just about everything I could need if I want to make these buttons, that you have that to offer, so that you make for a good source for exactly what you would need to do buttons.
Absolutely. Yes, that's what I try to design all my kits, so that if anybody wanted to have a go, they've got everything there in my kits.
Yeah.
The only thing I don't supply are scissors. I'm afraid you do have to supply your own scissors.
Oh, jeez. That's a huge problem. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. No, I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. Yeah. Yep. All right, one last question. In a normal work day, what portion is making buttons and what portion is getting up and getting one of the hula hoops and twisting it around?
Well, getting up and twisting, should we say, trying to use my hula hoops how it should be used, zero.
Okay.
And working on buttons probably the whole of the afternoons.
Okay. All right. Because, see, I'm envisioning you standing there with the hoop spinning around your hips and then your hands making a button. See, this is the ultimate. Yeah.
Oh, I wish.
Yeah, I can see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think my studio at the moment is so untidy that I think if I tried that, everything would be knocked everywhere.
That's just a vision I had there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when's the next workshop? We got a schedule coming up here?
Yes, the next workshop. Let me just see. Next workshop is on the 29th that I'm doing online.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I've got another one which is... full, but then after that, let me just virtual. Here we go. Yes, the one after that, I think, is on something like the 5th.
5th of December?
Yeah.
And there's room for that? So people can get, you have a regular schedule that people can sign up for then?
Oh, yes. Yes, on my homepage of my website, you can sign up. I produce a Dorset Button e-newsletter 3 times a year, and that goes out to about 1,400 people around the world. And also, I've got, if you sign up to that, you also have an option of 2 other things you can sign up for. One, a list of my workshops, which they'll get as and when I organize them, and also exhibitions that I'm involved in.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And they sign up for that all on your page, which is Henry's Buttons, correct?
Yes, on Henry's and henrys.buttons.co.uk.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I got to get the newsletter now.
Mm-hmm.
Got to get the newsletter. Got to get the book. Because you need the book to take the class. I mean, we've established that. Yeah.
And I definitely need the book because I need to figure out how to make those singletons.
Oh, that was to give you exactly how to work those, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I've made a few Dorset buttons, and they are great fun. The first time I took a class with them was on a needlepoint piece. She taught us how to make a simple Dorset button. And mm-hmm. then, and I thought, oh, I don't think I'll ever do this again. It's, you know, too much winding of thread. And then I kept seeing them various places. And I've tried them now another couple of times. And I keep thinking of, I just want to play with them some more because there's something about that shape and doing that, you know, doing the stitching in the button that makes it so fascinating. And using all the threads I have, because I do have quite a stash, as Gary has insinuated.
But no, you hit on it, Beth. That's what I think at the next level intrigues me, is the way these buttons can become an embellishment for mm-hmm. all kinds of needlework. I mean, you take just even a simple sampler, and to make some buttons and to drop those in here and there in the sampler, County Canvas needlepoint, and there just is all kinds of places where these buttons could be a really attractive embellishment.
Right.
Yes, they certainly can. They really can. Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you have on your, because I went and poked around your Etsy shop. You have them as brooches too. I wouldn't wear I don't really like dangly earrings. They kind of bother me. But I thought, oh, that's just lovely to have a little a Dorset button in a very fine thread that's, you know, as a brooch or a pin or a pendant. Just those were lovely. So yeah, it just expands that too, you know, what they can be used for. You don't just need to use them to do clothing. But I keep thinking all those people who do knit would want to know how to make a Dorset button. You spend all that time knitting a cardigan or knitting something. Who wants a plain old button that you get from the big box store when you can make your own?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And also people who knit, you know, when you do very, very well, Beth, you say you don't knit, but people who do have, when you knit something in very, very fine lace yarn, if you make something that needs a button to put on the front, you don't want a heavy button. You just want something really, really light. And sometimes it's very difficult to buy a man-made one. And if you use the bird's eye button from the Dorset button range, they can be made from the same yarn. Also, they're just so light. They just don't pull that front down if it's a sort of cardigan or something like that.
Yeah, well, right. So there's so many uses. I just, you know, I can see why people are becoming more intrigued with them again.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. This has been fun. We got to wrap up, but I do have one more question. Have you ever made them with sheep horn? Have you actually used the sheep horn to make them?
No, I haven't. No. I've got a collection of sheep's horn, and I've seen the discs that you can make the high tops from in museums, but I haven't actually used it myself. I'd be a bit reluctant to do that, I think. I wouldn't quite know, you know, sort of handling the something like that. But no, if it came our way, I'd probably give it a go.
Yeah. just a curiosity thing, because it would be very different from a stainless steel ring, yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so do you continue to collect them? Are you always on the lookout for buttons to add to your collection?
I am, yes. In fact, I'm I've just managed to get a whole load of singletons on a Rich Roll black card, which denotes that they were the second best, which I'm really pleased about. But
Wow.
buttons are now very, very collectible, so I don't know how long I'll be able to carry on doing that.
Okay, now see, quit adding new information because then I have questions. So a black card was second level. How did they grade them?
The pink card was depicted at the top, the best buttons. Black was second best, and yellow card were thirds.
I love the
Yeah,
history.
I know. It would be fun to go to the museums now, and we're gonna have to start looking and seeing what we can find. And so if we have any listeners that, especially are, in Washington, D.C., at the I wonder if the Smithsonian has some there.
Yeah.
That would be interesting to find out.
Yep.
Because then we'd have to do a road trip.
Oh, darn. Oh, darn.
You'll have to do a lot of things. Look at the original clothing. Yes.
Right.
Oh, well, all right, Anna. This has opened up a whole new world for me. This is fun. Yeah, this is great stuff. Okay, so it's henrysbuttons.uk. Was it henrys.buttons.co.uk is the website.
Henrysbuttons.co.uk.
Okay, Henry's, and we'll have a link in all the materials, but Henry's Button, and that's where you start. And then you can go to the Etsy shop there, and she has a Facebook page, and you can learn about Dorset Buttons and take her classes. And oh boy, oh boy, more enabling going on here.
All the time. All the time.
Yep.
Oh, I've got to mention that I'm also good doing a class for the Lace Museum, which is let me just get the website up for you. The lacemuseum.org, which is based in San Francisco.
And you're doing a class for them too, a virtual class?
A virtual class on the 1st of December.
Oh, there we go. This is so cool because they're coming right up here. We can actually get involved early. Yeah, excellent. Excellent. All right, Anna, boy, this was fun. Thanks for doing this. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you both.
Yes,
Yeah.
thank you.
Yep.
And if
Thanks.
I can help with Dorset buttons in any way, let me know.
Okay. All right. Thanks to everyone for listening.